This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina. I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And we are joined once again by our special guest star, performer and actor extraordinaire, Montana Lampert-Hoover. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm having a little allergy issue right now.
Oh, buddy.
It's not the best, you know, nose problems, but I'm okay.
tis the season, unfortunately.
It really is. Mm-hmm.
There's no escape.
Well, thank you for once again braving the terrors of No Bad Ideas.
Here we go.
I'm so excited. Every week we find some articles covering bad ideas or ill concepts that people had at some point. And I mean that ill in the really bad way, not ill like in the 90s term of appreciation. Tubular. And then we give ourselves just 10 minutes to try to turn it into a good story. Zach, I believe that you have the bad idea for us today.
Oh boy, do I ever. And I think that this is officially the worst idea, pound for pound, sentence for sentence, character for character, that I've ever found.
Okay.
Wow. Step in, if you will, to a real life nightmare from the New York Times.
Okay.
I would normally hold back the title, but it spoils it in the first sentence, and it is so damn short, there's just nowhere to hide from the man who goes to clear out his dead mom's home, finding a body in the freezer.
No.
Oh, no.
New York. A man found a decomposed body in his dead mother's freezer as he was clearing out her Manhattan apartment, police said. He found the body this week in a chest freezer that had been sealed with duct tape, the Daily News reported. Investigators said the body appeared to have been stored for over 10 years. Business superintendent Asmir Basim told the newspaper
in
Friday's article. The body was so decayed that authorities couldn't determine its sex, Basim said. Authorities are investigating and an autopsy is planned, city officials said in a statement. And having read a couple different versions of this story, I think that it is true from the New York Daily News or one of these that she denied work on the apartment when the super came by and was like, I hear the water's out. It was like, no, thanks. So I will set a 10-minute timer so that we can sort out mom's dirty secret.
What is the over under on it being dad's bones?
Yeah, what is the status of dad?
Yeah.
I have so many questions about the aftermath of all of that. Yeah,
also, man, a chest freezer in a Manhattan apartment.
The luxury.
When was this? Like in my mind, it was like, you know, I don't know, 1920. Like, it's like
This was May 1st.
Of this month?
Yes.
Oh my God.
This is like a developing story.
Okay, so you know those movies. I'm thinking kind of like Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again.
Of course.
Where like a kid is like, oh man, I know my mom. Like I've known her all my life. But then like, you know, they find like a chest full of like old romantic letters. And it's like, I didn't know my mom at all. I need to like go on a journey to like find out who
they
really were.
Who she was as a person besides just my mom.
I think like it's exactly that, but with instead of like but all the murders. Romantic letters,
a homicidal secret.
That's right. Murder. Yes.
No, and I think for the film version, we got to up it, and it's got to be murders in the plural.
Yeah, I would agree. My with
mom,
that.
My dead mom was Dexter, the musical.
The musical.
Wow.
It's a movie musical.
By Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah, written by Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Who else?
Yeah, this is truly, I feel like my brain is turning into mush with this story. Cause like, what, like, I think the body he finds, was it a man?
They
couldn't tell. It was so decomposed that they couldn't tell.
But like, he finds this body, they don't know who it is. And then maybe they find, yeah, like maybe it's bodies plural, but it's like in like all over the apartment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or like in different places.
Or in different locations. Yeah.
Here's a question.
As they go on the journey of figuring out who my mother is, I find dead bodies in every house I go to. Mm-hmm.
Here's a question. Do they like involve the police, or do they go on this journey on their own?
That is a good question.
Because I feel that, like, in order to better preserve the...
No pun intended, of course.
Thank you. The
gross
format. I'm just gonna power through that. In order to preserve the format of kind of that, like, you know, reflexive journey of discovery, it tends to be better without, you know, Detective Lestrade from the yard dogging his every step.
Yeah. Here's my adjustment for this, I think. And this takes some of the sinister punch out of it slightly, but like finds a body, but not decomposed beyond recognition as like a famous crime lord.
Okay.
And so it's a slow discovery of mom being a vigilante crime fighter.
I see. Right. Okay.
And so not involving the police necessarily, just being, you know, like all of these, you know, kingpins and crime bosses disappeared in the 80s. And it was weird. Is my mom behind that? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah, totally.
Maybe our protagonist is an ex-detective, but not currently a detective. Ooh. So like,
I like that.
Or has some, I like that a lot. Like some higher interest in this than just like,
oh.
Who's my mom?
Wait, right. I've got it. He used to be a district attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And the people whose mom he killed are all the people that he tried to prosecute, but they got away on technicalities. You know, all of the like people that are like, we are all 100% in agreement that this is the mob kingpin of the South Side.
Who he dedicated his life to prosecute after they murdered his father, the detective, who was on the scent of their crimes.
And maybe that's not that neat, but...
That depends on if it's one person or multiple people.
Right.
Okay, he could be a longshoreman that just got caught up accidentally in the mafioso's business.
Cool.
Right. I'm just saying, superhero origin story.
No, but this also
picks up in his mom's footsteps.
This also, though, makes sense for why he wouldn't tell the police, because then it would be like, mm-hmm. they're absolutely not going to believe that I wasn't in on it.
Right.
Like, you know,
right.
My mom was killing off my enemies. They are 100% going to lock me up as an accomplice.
For sure. That's great.
Yeah, he would know the law well enough.
Right. And this is a person who's had kind of a rocky relationship with their mother. Complicated relationship, and now is learning how much she really did care.
That's oh right. God. Yes.
Mommy Issues, the movie.
I thought I'd never had her approval. Turns out she really did love me.
Oh my God. I was going to say The Mother Load, the movie.
Ooh. Oh, that's so good.
Oh my God.
I love it. That's it. This is the title.
Because you gotta have mom or mother in the title.
And of course, like over the course of the movie, he's having conversations with his mental projection of his mother, played mm-hmm. by Angela Lansbury.
Oh, incredible.
Oh, just the heartstrings that are being tugged at, Gabrielle. Oh, Angela.
I got to meet her once after graduating.
Ooh.
Yeah, I got to interview her for a documentary. She's as delightful as you would imagine.
I am very delighted to hear that.
Yeah.
She's also been playing moms since she was like 19.
That's true.
She always looks like that.
Aw.
So cute.
Clearly, this is the role that she's been preparing for her entire life.
You know, she played Mrs. Lovett, so this is the obvious next step.
That's
after
right.
Sweeney
That's
Todd,
right.
Especially if it's a musical.
So in the 3 minutes left, where does her son take this wild adventure?
That's a good question. And I mean, I think that there's probably a lot of like, they're tracking down old friends of his mother's, mm-hmm. old people, trying to kind of be like, did anybody know about this? Like, how did this
start? I can't come out and ask, like, did you know my mom was murdering people? But like, how do I find it out?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah.
And and I think that it's them trying to piece together the mystery of like, how did his mom go down this like murderous path, mm-hmm. and probably a question of like, did my mom murder someone because of me, or was my mom a murderer? Like,
right.
You know, sort of like, when did the crime begin? Like, you know, was she kind of a like hardened criminal and a hardened killer from a long, long time ago, or did it start when she was in her mid-60s in order to help me?
Right.
You know.
Right. Do you think he ends up needing to turn to violence to get himself out of this one?
No, probably not.
Does he
maybe
get
caught? Maybe he has like a moment of violence, but it's not like, it's not, he doesn't kill anybody, but it's like.
Right. He has to make a choice.
He's so enraged by something. And that's like the thing that happens. And he's like, no, I will not become my mother.
And
I think that there needs to be, it probably doesn't happen in a courtroom, but there, I think like it needs to end with a moment of him being a good lawyer, like sort of like he's been carrying this weight all these years of, I wasn't a good enough lawyer to send Joe the rat to jail. And like that destroyed me. There needs to be this moment where in some way,
one of
shape
his mom's
form,
old friends can be in some sort of legal trouble and he can get them off.
Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. And this is also the person who will know like as much of the truth as there is to know about his mom. Now she definitely killed a man in the war or whatever, but Hat was loving and kind after that.
Yeah.
Is there not a showdown between him and the local police force that are somehow in cahoots with the mob? And finally catch him, and he gives the performance of a lifetime in the interrogation room to convince them to turn on the mob and let him get away with these murders.
Possibly. I don't hate it.
I don't hate it either.
I think that that is absolutely a way it could go.
And that's time.
All right.
Hey. Wow, Zach.
My God. I am so proud of you guys.
I can't believe that happened like, you know, 15 days ago.
Yeah,
yeah, no, that's a fresh story.
It's
as it
fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Super fresh. Mm-hmm.
So fresh and yet so stiff. Well, I am blown away by what you guys did with it, and I think I'm going to sit here in contemplative silence for a moment while we take a quick break and come back right after this. Hello, everybody. Zach Valenti jumping into this episode really quick with this brief message. If you're a regular listener to No Bad Ideas, then you know the drill. I'm here to shill for our Patreon page at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. It's the one and only place where you can support the production of this very podcast. But did you know that signing up for a monthly contribution on our Patreon page doesn't just support No Bad Ideas? That's right. It doesn't stop here. Every single dollar pledged fuels the creative engine that is Long Story Short Productions. That's the company that Gabrielle, Sarah, and I run that's brought you exciting experiments like Time Bombs, Zero Hours, and many more shows in development today. So if you're in a position to help invest in our creative future to entertain and delight you and everyone else that loves our work, head on over to nobadideaspodcast.com/support. Once more, that's nobadideaspodcast.com/support. Thanks so much for listening. And now, back to No Bad Ideas. All right, welcome back, everybody. And now it's time for another one of our signature creative corner chats with none other than Montana Lampert Hoover.
Woo! Creative corner.
So let's talk a little bit about what creativity has been like in your corner of the world, Montana.
Yeah.
Because, you know, right now, like all of us, you are locked down in a... very, very small space, and we're not doing a lot of kind of what creativity usually means, I think, for all of us, which is, I think, usually involves a lot of like being out, seeing people, doing things in kind of shared spaces.
Yes. The lack of absorbing creativity is, or creative, or the lack of being in creative spaces, I think, is really the thing that's more dragging on me right now, because I've been able to do readings with friends on Zoom, and like I've been doing a bunch of self-tape auditions. So I feel like I'm still sort of working that muscle, but it's not the same. I mean, even doing a Zoom reading is like, you're never actually looking at someone in the eye.
Right.
And it's very hard to act with someone when you cannot ever make eye contact. Like, it's not even an option. and so the acting creatively is definitely not a thing that's super happening. Although we're going to try to make it happen in a positive way. Working on a thing that hopefully will be, I don't want to talk about it too much, but hopefully like a thing we can share publicly.
We are very familiar with kind of that, like, this is Schrodinger's artistic project right now. It is definitely happening, except it's possibly not. And until like it is like 100% happening, it is better to just be like, we're doing a thing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I'm totally 100% on board with that metaphor. It's exactly that. I am doing... Letter of Mark Theater Company, which is the company I've been working for that's based out of Brooklyn, is actually producing some fiction radio comedy podcasts.
Ooh.
Exciting.
Which are a series of vignettes, basically. And they released the first episode a few weeks ago, and we're going to be releasing the next episode in a few weeks as well. They're not like weekly things, but... if you want to look out for that, Letter of Mark Theater Company.
We can link it in the description. We have the technology.
Let's do it. Click on those links.
And that is M-A-R-Q-U-E, right?
Q-U-E, yes, correct. M-A-R-Q-U-E. It's an entirely nautical-themed company, which amazing. I don't know if you knew, but it's like the founders are called the Captains, and we're all
I had no idea.
Yeah, we're the lieutenants. We're like the ensemble members of the lieutenants.
And dear listeners, this is a company that a lot of people that we've worked with in the past have done a lot of work with them. There's been a lot of overlap between our work and Letter of Mark's work. So it's fun to realize that, like, this entire time we were at sea.
I was going
to
say, having seen a couple of your productions,
this makes the sword parties make more sense than they did previously.
Yes, the sword razor makes way more sense. I know. It's if you don't ever go to the Letter of Mark website, it's like you wouldn't know how sword and nautical themed it is. But yeah, I'm involved primarily in the next episode in a film noir kind of parody, which is very funny, I think. So that's fun. And then I am writing a screenplay, I think.
That's the correct intonation of the amount of pain involved in writing a screenplay.
It's truly an endeavor, but I'm doing it with a bunch of people who also have never written a screenplay who are also actors.
Oh, dope.
So
grand.
We're doing like a class kind of jam thing. So that's really fun and terrifying.
How has it been to kind of go from the performing muscles end of the spectrum to now sort of trying to think of it from the complete other side of that equation?
The good news is I'm writing it to be in it. So that's
great,
like,
great.
That's helpful.
Great. It's helpful. It's very helpful. It is a little maybe self-indulgent, but I'm like, who fucking cares?
But also like
I'm going to do what I want.
Write your favorite part.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, I'm writing myself also. It's based on my life in high school. Mm-hmm. So I'm writing myself and would play myself, which is fun. Because for those listening, I may be close to 30, but I look about 16. So here we are. But writing so far, I think I always imagine myself writing a play. And then I kind of realize that I'm a visual person. And writing a screenplay has been way easier for me to like wrap my head around because sure. I'm seeing images, and that's what you're writing. You write all of the things you see, as opposed to a play where you're writing the things people say,
right?
Which, and you're trying not to tell people what you're going to see in the play. Like that's up to the, you know, production.
Director, yeah.
But for screenwriting, it's like you're not a lot of dialogue. Please write what's happening on the screen.
And you can be a lot more punctual about like, you know, not just they walk across the room, but sort of like, you know, you see their feet falling on the ground and the way that they step on the twig and it makes this kind of crunching sound.
I'm definitely going to use the phrase, you see their feet falling on the ground.
Thank you.
I mean, somewhere.
There you go. That's a freebie.
Oh, copyright Gabrielle Urena. I always imagined myself writing something at some point, and it's happening now because the performance part is not really a thing I can do I don't know. It's just not happening yet. I just don't know. It's really hard to plan for anything right now as an actor, I'm sure it is for everybody, but the industry is not going to be a thing really for a while, I think.
A little bit, yeah.
Very different at the very least. I've been
very different.
Hearing positive signals about animation, depending on the studio. And audio dramas doable in a way that live theater really isn't.
No, the whole point is the shared space.
But yeah.
Yeah. No, I've been, a friend of mine has his own, like, he does a lot of audiobooks and a lot of voiceover work. And he has his own, like, studio in his apartment. And I'm just, so he can record everything from his house, like, almost to the same level that it would be in a studio. And I'm like, maybe I should fucking do that because something to do.
Right.
Be great. Please hire me to do things. Thank you.
I was going to ask if the screenplay arose out of, dear God, can I have something to do? Or it was just like, now do I have the space to do this thing that I've always wanted to do?
Kind of both. Okay. Like, I didn't know what else to do. And people were in my acting class were interested in like writing. Mm-hmm. And so now we've just formed a little group.
That's awesome.
That are all doing it together. I'll let you know how the actual like writing of the thing goes. I'm sure it'll be a lot of words on a page that don't need to be on that page, but
I don't have any idea what that is like.
None at all.
You guys never have written anything, so you wouldn't really know.
No.
What is
about
this
any of this
writing?
Let me ask you, I'm always curious when talking to performers about scripts. Do you have any pet peeves about scripts or sort of like things that you think of as kind of like bad scripting habits that writers do that kind of don't actually help with the process. I know that the sort of like stereotypical old joke is that writers love like really long stage directions to tell you exactly how it's going to be. Whereas you as a performer like a little bit more of space to find the process rather than kind of just being like, here are the exact dots that you want to connect.
Yeah, that is not inaccurate. Although like if we're going like we, you know, Eugene O'Neill is a brilliant playwright. And I think, you know, 75% of his plays are stage directions. Right. So there are definitely exceptions to the rule. I think, you know, when it becomes tricky and when you see writing that you can kind of tell is either someone who's never written in a script of any kind before or is just unsure about like clearly doesn't trust the actor like very much. Like they're just like, this line is inquisitive and this line is explosive and this line, and you're like, I don't need emotional direction on every single line. Like that kind of takes away my entire job.
Right. But
that does happen. It happens a lot it happens a lot more, I think, in film and TV, where someone is just looking for something like so specific. But you see it in like, you know, Law and Order probably, or like Blue Bloods, or like, you know, that kind of episodic show where it's the same show every single time.
Right. Yeah.
Which nothing against those shows. Like they're super good at what they do. But you're seeing like they need something. It's almost like a commercial. Like that's how specific they need it to be. It's like this person has to say this thing and exactly this tone and this way. And then there's time for this thing to happen. And then this thing, it's not like a creative process of, you know, collaboration.
Right. And then cue the bump bump and cut to commercial.
Exactly. Dun dun.
And Lord knows
Dick Wolf is executive producer. Dick Wolf.
Lord knows that sometimes that may be because of, look, we need to shoot this thing in 4 days. We need everyone to show up on exactly the wavelength.
Totally.
And we need to do 2 takes and be gone.
Right.
But that's not always where that comes from.
I think it's like, it's not necessarily a red flag, but it could be a red flag.
Totally. Like
it's like a pink flag.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, I hear a sort of diverging path in the woods of medium choices, where it's like film and TV, that expectation may be less of a red flag. Whereas for theater, like, ugh.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Just, for it theater, seems like it a happens, lot of handholding.
It's a lot more like, oh, this is just bad writing if there's all that handholding in it. Or everybody is saying everything they think all the time, which happens a lot in plays when people are writing them, which I could very well do the same thing. I'm not a playwright. I do not know what that's like. But like, people don't say every single thing they're thinking all the time. And when you're like, in an argument scene and everyone's like, well, I am angry because of this thing. Well, I'm angry because of this thing. It's like, no.
Well, we've communicated.
We've communicated. End of conflict.
Yeah, that's realistic.
I will say that I had a teacher in college. I was taking calculus in college because I didn't get into 2 classes I wanted to get into. So I took calculus, which I took in high school. So I'd already taken it like literally the year before. And I decided, I went to Sarah Lawrence College, and we have the system there is like the Oxford system. So there's no tests or anything. It's all like big papers, and you do an individual project with every teacher. So you have like an independent study with all your teachers. So I decided I was going to write a play about math for my math class because I was like, let's get something out of this shit. And I bring my play, which involved matrices, because math had to be in it. And I bring it to this meeting with my teacher, and she was like, I just don't understand why there needs to be conflict. And I was like, I don't know what to say to that. I literally don't know how to answer that question. I was like, because otherwise it's just
math.
Math? Like, she literally just did not, like, like, I was writing about two roommates who had this like struggle of being roommates. And like, she was like, can't they just like get along the whole time? No, like I see scenes like that in plays too, where it's just like a conversation and there's nothing happening underneath anything. And it's either like everyone's saying everything they're feeling or there are no feelings in the scene. Right. And there's just like, people are just like, so how was your day? My day was nice. I went to the store. Great. I went to class. Like, no.
Welcome to your Pimsleur English language learning tape.
Exactly.
Now,
exactly.
I had a question and I may have misheard something. It sounds like you're writing with other performers on the same project or as sort of a, like everybody's working on their own thing and bringing it to like a writer's workshop kind of environment.
The latter. Yes. Yes, it's more of a collaborate, but we all like, you know, are invested in each other's ideas.
That's awesome.
That's great.
How is that working? How did that, I guess, coalesce and what's your experience like? Like, just for folks at home who may be inspired and want to kind of steal your idea.
I mean, do it. It's really great. It's really wonderful. It's like a group of about 8 of us that have really committed to doing the thing every week. And we are all in an acting class together and we're supposed to start a new session at the end of March and obviously did not do that. And my teacher was like, I'm not teaching scene study over Zoom. Like, that's fucking crazy. And he didn't want to like charge for anything. So we've been having different people come in and speak. And one of my teacher's friends came in and talked about creating your own content. And like it is so necessary to create your own content as an actor, because otherwise you're literally just waiting for the phone to ring. And your career is not going to happen if you're waiting for the phone to ring. So we were all curious about that. And then we were like, would you teach us how to write a screenplay? And he was like, yeah. And so that started happening and it's been super lovely. And like the first class was so terrifying because we all had to like pitch our ideas and we're all like, all of our ideas are horrible. Like, no one's ever had to come up with an idea or a pitch before. So we're all like, no. But it's been so wonderful. Everyone's been really supportive. And like, I genuinely want to see all the things that people are creating,
that's
which
awesome.
Is crazy. Cause I was like, someone's going to be a dud in here. Like, wow. There's gotta be one. And I really don't feel that way. Like, there maybe are some things that like are movies I wouldn't necessarily like, you know, think of wanting to see, but now that I'm invested, I'm like, yes, I want to know how that
that's
horror
amazing.
Movie ends. So yeah. And there's like a couple people writing, a TV series.
Oh, dope.
As well. So if anyone wants to do that at home, get a couple friends together, like meet once a week on Zoom, just like set a time, you know, talk for an hour. We talk for like 3 hours because we're crazy, but like, you know, don't Zoom exhaust yourself because that's a thing. And I highly recommend it. It's like one of those things that you're like, I'm going to join a writer's group. And like, you never do it. And now you can, in a way that's like, I could talk to whoever I want because everyone's across the country, but it doesn't matter, or across the world.
Right.
That is an amazing silver lining. I guess just so that anybody else has time to ask their questions. I'm curious, what in the crash course on how to write a screenplay, did you find most useful, in just kind of getting that friction out of the way to get started with, this group?
Oh my gosh. Learning like what should happen on every page. The person who's teaching us has a like screenplay guideline that he made with his writing partner. And so it's like page 1 through 10, this happens. Page by the end of page 36, that's the end of act one. End of act one, major, like the person's life changes forever. Then act two, the biggest one, the most stuff happens, like, you know, big high point in the middle of act two, by the end of act two, lowest point of the for the character. then Act Three is like, tie it all up as fast as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're writing a screenplay that's like 2 hours, which is like standard, which is what we're all doing right now because none of us have ever written before. So we're not trying to like break rules in big ways yet. Mm-hmm. But just learning that that can be prescriptive in this big way is very helpful because boundaries set you free. That is like my new thing that I'm saying, because I'm like, boundaries are so important because if someone was just like, write your screenplay, go, I would be like, okay. But now I'm like, oh, this needs to happen in this part. And because we're all like bouncing ideas off each other, I can be like, well, I thought the end of Act Two should be this thing. And then someone's like, what if it's this thing? And I'm like, ooh, that's even better. And then I like, you know, do that thing instead. So that was really helpful. I don't know why, but I had never thought about the fact that it could be that like, this needs to happen on these pages for mm-hmm. screenplays, but it mm-hmm. like, you guys know that, but like it is. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. Cause plays are not like that. Like, plays can be whatever the fuck you want.
The rhythms are much more amorphous.
Right. Squishier, so much more stretchy.
And now that I watch things, like I watch a movie and I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, that was 30 pages. Oh, that was 60 pages.
Now
oh,
you see the Matrix cut.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like literally the movie The Matrix is like literally Knock Knock Neo, page 5, page 10, I forget.
It's a perfect thing. And like, yeah, everything that needs to happen in the first 10 pages is like so important. And I was like, wow, I never thought about it that way.
I have a very mixed metaphor of coming out of Wesleyan film school with thinking of movies as this emotional clockwork that is a roller coaster magic trick for your mind.
Wow. That is mind boggling.
Do you want to unpack that a little bit?
I mean, it's just like emotional clockwork in the sense that like a clock, it is incredibly mechanical and structured and not wibbly at all, but it's machinery designed to make you feel emotions, which are squishy and unpredictable and, you know, and very hard to talk about, you know, sort of directly, as anybody who's ever been to a therapy might have a sense.
Of, single therapy.
And one therapy, please. If you buy 10, you get one for free. No, that's not how it works. And so that's the clockwork, emotional clockwork part, which is why, you know, in a TV show, if things get good, they're going to get bad because that's just how it goes. Sad. And then the roller coaster magic trick for your mind part is having watched a very, very horrific action movie last night with my roommates, I just like felt the, like, if I had a heart rate monitor on, you could see where the ups and downs are. And mm-hmm. like, you need these peaks and valleys for the peaks to feel peaky and the valleys, like, you know, sort of like provide that, just the contrast. It was just like all, you know, craziness all the time, you'd be numbed out, or, you know, just there'd be no,
be
nothing to follow.
Uncut Gems.
Oh, hey. I haven't seen it. Oh. I need to see it. Okay.
Oh my God. I have never felt so much anxiety in a movie before. I was like, why?
I'm excited.
And that is, kind of just like, does not stop.
It's literally the beginning, like from the moment the movie opened, I was like, oh, this is going to be the whole thing.
Like, right. Mm-hmm. And that's where like the, Jesus. Like there are different kinds of roller coasters, right? Like there's the ones that like are like the Hulk where it just shoots you out and it's just like insane the whole time. And then it's over and you're like, what happened to me? And then there are the ones that like take you up. Oh my God. Are we going to keep going up? Oh my God. And then like, you know, you hit this point where it's kind of chill and then it like surprises you. So yeah. And then the magic trick part is just, instead of being on a stage with props, you have, what a camera lets you do, or CGI at this point with, you know, sort of a, you know, you have the ability to break time and space and, mm-hmm. you know, make pictures and have people say things. And that is supposed to conjure up very specific emotional reactions by how you control information. And so there is a lot in stage magic that I think ends up applying to film. Not that I know anything about stage magic, but just like thinking about it as a magic trick, I think it was helpful for me in writing a screenplay back in school to just like be like, what do I need the person to be feeling right now? So what do I have to have the, you know, like what, yeah, yeah. What do the characters have to do? Just, yeah. And in solving problems on, oh, this has to be page 35. This thing happens. Well, how do I present this thing?
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I like the magic part of storytelling is also my favorite part of storytelling. I think.
Well, now that I've taken up the rest of our time with that very convoluted metaphor, where can people find your work, Montana?
So Letter of Mark Theater Company, as I mentioned before, I have a website, which is just montanalamperthoover.com, where I'll be updating as often as I possibly can. And you can follow me on Instagram. I don't really tweet, so don't.
That's why.
You can follow me on Twitter, but like, it's not going to be interesting. I'm not going to lie.
9 out of 10 doctors recommend.
Recommend. Please don't tweet.
But like, if you just want to feel the existential pleasure of, I have now followed her.
Yes, then please. That would be M. Lampert Hoover. There's no hyphen in my two last names. They're just two names.
I'm doing it right now. Following.
Yes, one more follower.
That's right.
You're more important now.
Oh my god.
That's how that
works. Over 900, I think, now. That's
get it.
You know, that's the big bucks. yeah, hopefully there'll be more stuff that I can say eventually that is virtual that I can promote.
But. Amazing. Well, awesome. Once you've got the Zoom show up, you know, we should have you back on to.
Yes, I will let you know.
What theater in the age of
and this
video
I forgot
streaming
this,
is like.
Yeah, that'll be crazy. I don't know if that'll be anytime soon, but we'll see. And there's also a another podcast coming out with Letter of Mark, and there's another radio drama that will be also coming out through another theater company called American Slavery Project that I will be part of as well, which is a play about women's suffrage. And I play Alice Paul, who was the organizer of the first ever Women's March on Washington in 1913.
Whoa.
Amazing.
Very cool. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to all of that.
Me too.
And to hearing more about how the screenplay goes as it keeps developing.
Oh, yes. I will definitely update you on all of that as soon as I can. And also be like, help me.
We will be happy to.
And that is so inspiring. Best of luck to the whole group.
Thank you. Thank you.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Rena Sarame and Jennifer Schneider. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.